Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
That's where the Occupy movement should be forced to live. That's where the rats who are running around. Okay, turn it off. Here it is raining in the Bay Area, and we have to be thankful for that. It'll wash the vermin away for a few nights who have been looting, burning, robbing. Obama said the other day on Black Entertainment Television that, now, most of the protesters were peaceful, is that right? And the stooge on Black Entertainment Television said, weren't most of the protests peaceful? Why, yes, they were. That's why they were burning and looting, attacking police with bottles and bricks. Now, one of the reasons this nation is in such trouble, and I'm not going to talk about this for more than 30 seconds, is because we no longer have a fourth estate. If it wasn't for the internet and talk radio, you not only would be living in a one-party system, which you already live in, but you'd be living in an abject dictatorship. The only firewall left between the dictatorship emerging under this thin man in the White House and you is the internet and talk radio. There is no press. There is no newspaper business anymore. The major media is gone, other than Fox News on occasion. Tell me who shows you what they're actually doing, and tell me who deconstructs the lies coming out of Obama's mouth on a daily basis. Now, we're hearing a lot about torture this week, and yet most Americans who are Christmas shopping don't even know about the story. They don't know that Dianne Feinstein stabbed the Statue of Liberty in the heart. They don't realize that Dianne Feinstein cut the Statue of Liberty's throat. They don't realize that Dianne Feinstein set the Statue of Liberty on fire around the world. They don't realize what a vile lowlife this 83-year-old Harridan is. What did she do? She released a report based on 12 years ago saying that some members of the CIA tortured some vermin who were going to blow up buildings and set things alight in America. And she said we should be ashamed of that period in America. Well, it turns out that her report was a lie, number one. Number two, she never interviewed anyone other than the college girls who wrote it for her. And number three, five former CIA directors attacked her. Most of them were Democrats, which is a shocker. It's a huge story because it's damaging America's image abroad. It will make it almost impossible for us to break the next terrorist unless we revert to these tactics. Now, here's the question. I don't want to talk about torture and what is torture. I think that's been done. I think it's boring. I want to talk about punishment, crime and punishment. I want to talk about punishment of these so-called protesters, whether they be in Ferguson, Manhattan, Oakland, California, Emeryville, blocking highways with impunity, because the liberals have handcuffed our police. Obama in particular and his most vile attorney general, Eric Holder, the most racist attorney general in American history, has lynched the police on the big lie that they're all racists. That means black police are racist. That means Asian police are racist. Hispanic police are racist. And of course, he doesn't mean that. He means only white police are racist. And now, if that is not an example of how crazy these people are, I'd like to know what is. But I don't want to talk about that as well. I saw a story about punishing children. An Eastern Tennessee father and stepmother of a five-year-old girl who died after being forced to drink large amounts of grape soda and water as a form of punishment have been sentenced to 35 years in prison. Randall Vaughn and Mary Vaughn pled guilty to second-degree murder and aggravated child neglect and were sentenced on Monday in Rogersville, Tennessee. You see, the Vaughns forced their daughter, Alexa Lindboom, I don't even know if it's their daughter, the girl, to drink more than a half a gallon of grape soda and water over 2 hours after they found she had consumed a soda or two they had told her were reserved for the adults, Armstrong said. The consumption of the large amount of liquid Mayor Bloomberg, ex-Mayor Bloomberg, caused the girl's brain to swell. So it wasn't the soda that did it, Mayor Bloomberg. It was the large amount of liquid. So I suppose Mayor Bloomberg, who is now working for Obama behind the scenes, I guess, can now ban large amounts of liquid, and we can send out liquid police. But the issue is this. Do you punish your children? Do you still punish your children behind closed doors? Did you punish your children when you had young children? And it will lead to the biggest question of the day, which is, were you punished as a child and how were you punished? I did this topic 5 years ago, And I had calls that would shock you from people around America with the types of punishments that were engaged in 20, 30 years ago. You'll never believe what you're going to hear. Were you punished when you were a child by your mother or your father? And how did he punish you? How did she punish you? I'm not going to give away some of the things I heard because I can't believe what you're going to hear. This is not going to be the whole show. That's one of the shows. There are many show topics. There are many other topics. And the main topic is crime and punishment. To the liberal, there should be no consequences for any bad behavior. If the child smears feces on the wall when the child is an infant, they think it's an art form. And they take a picture of it and send it to the recruitment committee at Harvard University saying that a new Picasso has been born. The same liberals say there should be no death penalty. The same liberals say there should be no punishment. Hillary Clinton the other day said we should empathize with our enemy. This is how crazy liberalism is. So it comes back to punishment. How do you punish your children without hurting them? Do you punish your children anymore? And there are many methods of punishing children without hurting them. Now, Obama punishes America every day with his lies. For example, I'm going to play something for you that you will not believe. He went on another obscure television show, and he said that he's been discriminated against. Now, here is the president of the United States, the most powerful man in the world, and he's playing the race card and saying he's been discriminated. Listen to clip one.
I think that if you look at the history of race in America, it's usually not a single moment when suddenly everything gets solved. It's a process. I think that
it's a liberal word.
Because of our policies, there's more equality than when I came in.
More equality. You know, Mr. Obama, I wrote something in the 80s called The Death of the White Male. And what I said in the first paragraph was, without quality, there can be no equality. Did you ever read that in your years at Columbia? I doubt it. I want you to now go on and listen to clip two from the commander-in-chief.
The folks who say there's not a lot of improvement, I don't think we're living in the 50s and remember what it was like to be black or Hispanic and interacting with the police then. They don't even remember what it was like 20 years ago. There has been improvement. The question is, what more do we need to do?
Now, in the next sound clip, get ready to gasp. Listen to number three.
You'll be discriminated?
Of course. Well, I think it'd be pretty hard to grow up.
What did he say? Hold it. Stop. What did Ramos say? I didn't hear that. Have you been... play it again because it's inaudible. Let's hear it.
You'll be discriminated?
Of course. Well,
Is he speaking English or Spanish? Well, say it in Spanish properly. Can he speak Spanish right? Play it again.
You'll be discriminated.
Of course. Well, I think it'd be pretty hard to grow up.
So the president's fluent in Spanish? Okay, so play the whole Obama thing in three.
You'll be discriminated.
Of course. Well, I think it'd be pretty hard to grow up in the United States of America without having any experiences of discrimination.
Oh, my God.
But what I do know is in my life...
Can you believe this? Here's a spoiled boy who never worked a day. So far as I know, he didn't work as hard as I did, an immigrant son. I don't know that he was ever a busboy. I don't know that he was ever a soda jerk. I don't know that he ever worked in an ice cream factory. I don't know that he ever worked in his father's store, because I don't think they had stores in Kenya or in Indonesia, so far as I know. What do you mean he's been discriminated against? The skids have been greased for this guy from day one. So I'm not going to get worked up over an imaginary insult, because I'm not going to have a fake righteous indignation. But this is a form of mental torture that he's subjecting America to. But I want to move on to children. I want to move on to children. Now, how was I raised? Many people ask me, Savage, how did you become such a great man? How did you become such a success in radio and in the written word? How did you become a father and a family man, as flawed as you are in all of these fields, and no one's perfect? How did you do it? How do you keep going on? What motivates you? How did you start out? Were you born this way? Were you made this way? I would say that my father had a lot to do with who I am, and my rebellion against my father had even more to do with who I am. He was old school, European, immigrant guy. I realized just this morning, as we're driving here in the rain in the Bay Area of San Francisco, again, another media hype. They made you thought that Noah's Ark would be needed today. A rain, nothing. Every minute, the morons are standing on the Golden Gate Bridge with a drizzle coming down. And the idiots are out at a creek in San Anselmo waiting for it to flood. And there's no flooding. The whole crew, they sent three television trucks to a creek that hasn't flooded.
All waiting for Armageddon now. No Armageddon, a rainstorm. You grow up in the East Coast, there's nothing. It's like a spring rain. Unbelievable to me. You know, they could use a bar of Irish Spring in their mouths in the media rather than talking about something they know nothing about. This is a continuation of the stupidity in the media. So I'm enjoying the rain here. And I'm thinking about the rain. And as I was driving to the studio in the rain today, I thought back on my poor immigrant father and his circle of friends and how a man went broke as a contractor. You know, contractors then were not contractors today. They probably had no insurance. He talked about one of the men who had pulled himself up from immigrant status and became a small builder on Long Island, was building a house, one house. And he poured the concrete one night. He went home and it rained that night. And he came in the morning and all the concrete had been ruined. And he said the man's hair turned white overnight. Now, that story stuck with me my entire life. Of course, I don't know if it's true. I suspect it's true. But the story occurred to me today, or came back to me today, when I realized what fear immigrants lived with in those days, because there was no welfare state. There was just the law of survival. And that brings us to today. The reason most immigrants today are lazy, the reason most immigrants today come here to suck off the milk and honey that you and I produce and do nothing for this society, the reason Obama brings them in by the millions, most of whom don't work, and I'll prove that in 1 second. Yeah, I know we see them doing the hard work. I get it. Meanwhile, at home, there's 5 children and a wife who does nothing, and they're living greatly on social services and being educated and medicated at your cost. So he's working for $15 or $20 an hour, and the social cost is $70 to $100 an hour. So don't tell me they all come here to work. It's a net deficit. It's been studied. The reason that they can get away with it is because there's a welfare state. The reason they're not afraid of anything and they don't motivate their children to go out and be the soda jerk or the child to go out and do other stuff is because they don't have to. And that's why America is slowly dying. But that comes back to the issue of punishment. How were you punished? How were you punished as a child? 855-400-7282 is the phone number. And the minute I come back, I will tell you how I was punished as a child and would help me make the man I am. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We're talking about crime and punishment and the lack of crime under Obama. As you know, we're a crime-free nation. As you know, in Ferguson, there was no looting and burning. It was all imaginary. It was a creation of the right wing. There were no buildings on fire. Police were not attacked. Storekeepers were not beaten up. We know that in Oakland, California, Emeryville, San Francisco, it's all been peaceful. That's according to the government media lying complex. It's a form of mental torture living in the Soviet Union of the States of America. So I switched it from politics to personal, and I asked you how you were raised as a child and were you punished. And I'll tell you my upbringing in a minute. Ken on WABC has a heck of a story. Ken, were you punished as a child?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, sir.
Tell us how already. Don't punish us.
Number one, should I curse, speak out of turn? The easy one was a bar of soap. Right in the mouth. Make sure you had that on your teeth so you taste that for a while.
Well, wait. Who did it? Your mother or your father?
That was my mom.
And now, did she put the soap in a sock or direct?
Oh, no, direct. Absolutely. My dad.
Your dad was nicer or worse?
Oh, no, he hit me with the belt. The switch was my mom. She was from the South, so that was her method. She'd go out there, find that switch, and yes, I got that as well. So I think I'm okay today, but...
Well, if a liberal therapist ever got a hold of you, they'd probably institutionalize you.
Yes, sir.
Now, do you have children of your own, Ken?
Yes, I do.
Did you raise them the same way? I doubt it.
No, I did not.
See, I know that. Most people who are raised in a very, very strict, mean fashion, as you were, usually go out of their way to not do that to their children. Am I correct?
You are correct.
So what method did you use when Johnny or Janie got out of line to tell them they were wrong or get them back in line? That's the real question.
simply put them in their room at this point. Occasionally, I know when they were young, I make them a little swat on the behind, but nothing to the extent that I was brought up. That's for sure.
But did you have to control your urge to hit them, or you never had it?
A couple of times when they were disrespectful, you certainly want to hold off and give them a little slap. But no, I would hold that back. But yes, I had the urge. I mean, sure.
And let me ask, Ken, was your dad Italian?
No, he was European, Russian.
Russian? Oh, I thought perhaps he came from Germany, but okay.
No.
I'm sorry. No, because I had an Italian caller once. Wait till you hear the calls we're going to get in the first hour. You're not going to believe this. And, well, I'll tell you, I'm a little shocked that they did such severe stuff to you, but I don't think that's all we're going to hear today.
No, and at the time, I didn't think it was so severe. You know, once in a while, like, you almost expected it. You felt like...
But did they beat you till you cried?
I wouldn't say that. Maybe...
All right, you know what? I'm sorry to hear it, but I'm glad you turned out so well. It proves that a person can overcome pretty severe stuff. And I'm giving you a free box of Shari's berries. And it's the most delicious stuff. It's chocolate, covered strawberries. I don't even want to say it. I'm going to go and get one. I'll eat a box of them. You were in a free one. That's a free gift. Giving them out this week. Would you believe it? Anyone could do it at berries.com. When I come back, punishment, crime and punishment. How were you punished? I didn't tell you how I was punished yet. I didn't get to it. I promise you, the minute I come back, I won't punish you by withholding that anymore.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Okay, it's enough. You get the point. I really like this song. The fact is, I do feel good. I love rain. I like nasty weather. I don't understand the nation I'm living in. It rains already. The media is dying. Oh, it's raining in California. That's after years of screaming about global warming and a drought and we're going to die and the fish are flopping on the sand. Now all of a sudden it's raining and the lunatics are running out the Ritalin children. The Ritalin children who grew up and are now newscasters. The idiots are standing on the Golden Gate Bridge with a drizzle coming down in the raincoat. Another three morons are standing in San Anselmo Creek and it's not overflowing, waiting for it to overflow. I think of the people who built this world. I think of the first ocean voyagers. The first thing I thought of this morning, would you believe when I woke up and it was raining heavily in the middle of the night? I thought of soldiers who fought in the rain. I thought of men who fought in Vietnam in the jungles. I thought of men who fight at high altitudes in Afghanistan. I thought of men who jump out of airplanes from very high, low altitudes. You know, they jump at high altitudes and open at low. High-low jumpers. I think of the deprivation men go through in this world. I think of the early days in America when merchant seamen set out without power into rough seas to go halfway around the world to kill a whale or deliver a bale of cotton. I can't believe what a nation of wimps we become. So it invigorates me when I see weather. I woke up in the morning, I look out the window, I live near the water, and I see seagulls flying around, and the bay is just whamming, damming, bamming, bamming. And I see the gulls flying around as in one of my oil paintings from the 1900s. And the fish are not laying there waiting for an Obama check. The fish are jumping in the storm. The seagulls are flying around. They're not waiting for a government handout. They know they have to go out and catch a fish if they're not to drop dead by tonight. And I think of the millions of parasites in this society. I'm sick to my stomach of what this man is inculcating in people. Sitting at home on their behinds doing nothing. 50% of the adults don't work in this country. And he's bringing in as many more as he possibly can. Oh, he'll say, yeah, they work. Right. And the other side of the family doesn't work. It gets me sick. The country can't survive. Anyway, I'm invigorated by rough weather. Let's put it to you that way. So we're talking about punishment. How were you punished as a child? And before I take my next call, I've yet to tell you how I was raised, and I was raised through the silent treatment. My father was rather, I'm sorry to say, look, he's deceased, God rest his soul, he did the best he could. I try to tell you, setting the stage, immigrant, poor, didn't really make it big in America, was a small shopkeeper, worried every day of his life that one day someone wouldn't come in his store and he'd be out of business. He was the sole provider. I understand it. I understand it. So every meal I ate, he would say, yeah, you're living pretty good off the fat of the land. I didn't know what he was talking about. Every forkful I took, he made me guilty. You're eating pretty good. You're doing pretty good with the knife and fork. What he was saying was, is how come you didn't work for the food in his own way? What did I know as a fat little kid in Queens? I just continued to eat. I figured he was telling me a joke, but it was sadistic. And then when he really wanted to hurt me, if I did something, quote, wrong, he would give me the silent treatment for 2 or 3 days. I didn't even know. See, the silent treatment's the worst form of psychological torture you could impose upon a child, believe me. And most women know that. That's why they do it to their husbands. No, that's a joke. The thing is, silent treatment is a very brutal form of psychological warfare on a family member. And it's vicious. It's cruel. And the lowest kind of mind engages in it, thinking that they're hurting people. They're only hurting themselves. Because I didn't even know what he was doing. I had no idea what he was. If I say, hey, Dad, what did I do? He would go with his finger to a mouth and shake his head. No, he'd shake his head no. I said, what did I do? Shake his head. Wouldn't even tell me what I did. So he was a loony, a little on the loon job. But it's why I went into talk radio, because now I can hang up on you. Now, I think about the psychological. I think about how we're made and what motivates us. But if I look back over my long life, I say, wait a minute. The silent treatment that I was raised on somehow brought me into public speaking, where I can control the audience, and I can control the responses of an audience, and I can control the dialogue, and I can cut the audience off when I don't want to hear them anymore. Like, if they say anything I don't want to hear, I hit the kill button. So I'm very hard to live with as a result, but the fact is, it's worked for me my whole life. The dog likes me. That's all that matters. But I want to go back to the crime and punishment stories of the Savage Nation. And that's the how were you punished as a child, because some of them are amazing. Sid, by the way, called in the middle of this because he was tortured in World War II. He wasn't talking about a child's punishment. You know, we're hearing a lot about waterboarding. You want to hear what real torture is? Here's Sid on WABC. Sid, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I'm here. I'm still okay, here. I'm going Sid. To be here a long time, even after all the torture. I was captured by 3 German soldiers, and they wanted to make me talk, and I wouldn't talk. And the more I kept quiet, the more they beat me. They broke my back, they broke my chest, they smashed my head in, and I still didn't talk, and they left me for dead in the snow. So I'm still here today, and I listen to that Diane Frankenstein talk about torture. She should be put in a cell with one of the prisoners and see how well they live.
Good for you. Now, Sid, I hear you have real outrage. You know what real torture is, and you still wouldn't talk.
Why they allow people like Diane Frankenstein to open up that big mouth of hers and to put the CIA down. If it wasn't for the CIA, this country would be in the garbage pan.
Sid, I want to ask you something. You recovered from all of your horrible torture physically. Did you ever recover from it mentally?
What's that?
Did you ever recover from the torture mentally?
Not really. I've written a number of books about it. In fact, I have one book that My Time in Combat, which is out shortly. And I was also awarded the Legion of Honor by the French government.
Holy God. Sid, what is your name? Let's all check out Sid's book.
And the name of the book is My Time in Combat. I've written 20 books already.
But Sid, what's your last name?
Germansky. Germansky. I'm going to send you a copy.
Wait, hold on. Sid, how did you become so tough?
When I was a kid, I had to be tough. I came from the Bronx, and you had to fight every block of that you went from school. And there was one incident when I was 10 years old, and I was walking along 3rd Avenue near the Tremont Avenue, and 2 kids, black kids, came up to me. They were about 14 years of age. I was 10, a little scrawny kid. And they said, do you have any money, Jew boy? They didn't even know me. I said, I don't have no money. So they grabbed me, and they took 3 cents out of my pocket, and they started to run away. So I picked up a rock, and I heaved it as hard as I could, and I hit the kid in the back of the head. I split his head open. The blood shot out of his head, and he laid on the floor, and his other...
Whoa, hold it. I think Eric Holder's hearing this, Sid. He's going to come at you for a racially motivated crime.
You know something? When they read my new book, Catcher, the Russian government will come to kill me.
Why? Why will the Russian government come to get you?
I write about killing all the KGB and knocking off the Prime Minister.
Wait. Now you're confusing me. Is it fiction?
It's fiction, but it's pretty close to what I wanted to do. I was capable of it.
So you had a lot of, let me reverse, because you grew up being picked on and you were scrawny, you learned to fight. But you know, the act of throwing the rock indicates that you had a fighting spirit. No one taught you to throw that rock, did they?
No, my father was a very big man, and he told me, if somebody bullies you, smile, hold your hands on your chest, and always hold these two rocks in your, he gave me two rocks to carry in my pocket in school. And when he bullied me, he says, always smile. They won't know what's going to hit them. And you got the and they take the rocks and hit them in the side of the head. And that I did that, so they stopped bullying me.
But nice, nice. You would have been a nice kid to go to school with. I could have used you at PS 42 in the Bronx.
Oh, that was at Samuel Gompers in the Bronx.
So Sid, did you have children?
Yes, I had a son and a daughter. My son...
I'm sorry, your son what?
My son passed away. He was a DVM.
Now, what is that? A doctor of veterinary medicine?
Yes.
And what did he die from, young?
She lives in New Jersey, but she doesn't want to have anything to do with me because I remarried after my wife passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it. But, Sid, your son died from what?
Multiple myeloma.
Oh, my God. Well, that must have taken a lot out of you. No, I understand, Sid. Listen, I know it could break a man. See, you can live through torture, but you can't live through the loss of a child. That's the greatest pain a man can suffer. Ask any psychologist, they'll tell you that. Every child that can take anything, there's a man who couldn't be broken by Germans who were breaking his back, and he was broken in his heart by the loss of his son. So rather than making more of this than we already have, and out of respect for Sid's emotional pain, I think we shall invite Sid on the show when his book comes out. And Sid, God bless you, man. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
What a call that was. Unbelievable to me. I mean, you know, you start a show like this, I figured we'd get some pretty bad calls of people who, you know, were punished pretty rough. But I never thought we'd get a veteran calling like that. I would say in my entire 20-year career, this has to be, in terms of a caller, I don't know how to frame it. I don't want to, you know, diminish the man's suffering by saying the most interesting, because that wouldn't have the same application to what I'm trying to say. The most astonishing call, the most remarkable call would be the correct word. The most remarkable caller of my entire life just called today on the 11th of December in the year 2014. And, you know, I want to take a diversion here on the show. I know many of you love this show, and many of you get the show for 2 hours, and many of you get it for three. Last night, after I signed off for 2 hours, I went into the third hour, and I was totally and absolutely bored of politics. I didn't want to talk about Feinstein and torture and Boehner. I had had enough of it. So I shifted to something that I rarely do. We play jazz music behind me, saxophone music, and I read radio poems taken from my shows, meaning there's a young man, 27, who I never met, I'm not going to do it right now, who has listened to my shows over the years and taken out the essential words from my long dialogues, or monologues rather, or even sometimes dialogues, and he removes the words, and then he set them up so they read like poems, and he captures, in other words, the jewel or the essence from the piece of coal. And then we played music and I read them, and I went for an hour on that. And the reason I'm mentioning it to those of you who didn't hear it is this. In the coming months, I will remain political. I will remain political because that's my nature. But truthfully, you're going to hear much more of the other sides of Michael Savage. Science, medicine, health, poetry, music, art, museums, dogs, food. You're going to hear it all. Because a man is made up of, a man is a sum total of all of his parts. And I'm not going to just give you one part of the pie. I got to do more than that. And, you know, politics are interesting, but there's only so much anyone can listen to it. By the way, if you're interested in cooking, I just cooked lunch for myself before the show. And many people want to know what I cook. I put it up on michaelsavage.com. It should be up later. It's unbelievable. I'm so tired of eating garbage. I can't take restaurant. I can't take it anymore. Salt and this and that. So I made my own food. Where do you see the dish I cooked just before the radio show? But How did you get raised? I mean, how were you raised? By what? Look at this one, Matt on KSFO. Great call, Matt. How were you raised?
Hey, Michael. I was raised by a pretty angry old Irishman, and he was a rageaholic, I would have to say. And the thing was, is I was the youngest of seven kids, and I watched a lot of this going on. It was almost like, you know, watching a TV show or something like that. So by the time,
what, you mean he punished one after the other in different ways?
Yeah. I remember, I can see it now in front of me, and it gives me chills. I was.
Well, what was the, okay, let's make it clear. Did he use corporal punishment? Did he hit the kids?
Well, it was beyond a spank. It was, definitely so. My oldest brother was around long before I was, and he can barely talk about some of the things that happened to him, you know. He would get punched and held down and hit, and I experienced that once with my sister. Her and I have a special connection where we're kind of stand out alone from the other brothers and sisters. And when I saw that happening, it just broke my heart. And I got to the point where I was the youngest of seven, and by the time I got to be a pretty good size, I lifted weights with my brother. He was doing track. I wrestled and stuff like that. My dad was old and frail, and I broke a fight between he and my mom once and held him down. And I think it was the first time anybody had ever stood up to this 6'3" big guy.
And what happened when your father was finally subdued by his son? This is an Abraham and Isaac story. What happened to Abraham when Isaac held him down?
My mom, I think, felt more comfortable. You know, there was always...
No. I want to know the look in Abraham's eyes. What was the look? I'm sure you carry that with you. What did Abraham's eyes look like?
He was stuttering, trying to get words out of his mouth. And I was maybe inherently mature enough to know not to flatten his face, which I probably could have done. I held his arm across his throat, and I yelled and screamed at him, you know, don't you ever touch her. His eyes were the size of saucers, and he was stammering.
Dean, this, man, I'm sorry, this is a heck of a story, and I want to say thank you for, you know, the call. It's unbelievable to me. Did you raise children, I assume, not the same way?
Not the same way. And honestly, Michael, it almost makes me want to cry daily.
Okay, hold on a minute. I got to go to a quick commercial break because these are the people who make my show possible. I'll be right back with Matt.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. You'll never believe. This is a one-off show. My number one sponsor is Swiss America, and Craig Smith is a friend of mine. Been with me from the beginning, and he listens to every show I do when he can. And he said, I've never heard a show like this in my entire life. And I hope you feel the same way. We've got a lot to talk about in the news, but I'm going to continue with, how were you punished as a child? And what did it do to you? And do you punish your children? Okay, we got a lot to do, and I got an author at 1:30. Well, the next hour, because different times everywhere.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
We're talking about torture.
An empty bottle of booze.
All right, you can turn over. Well, unless you can get to the fast part sooner. I mean, I don't have time for the preamble. All right, turn it off. That's why I don't play Johnny Cash. There's too many stories to... We're talking about torture. How Dianne Feinstein tortured the truth. How Obama lies and tortures the truth. How Eric Holder tortures America with lies about racism. And then we got to crime and punishment and how children were raised, or are raised, and were you punished as a child, and how you were punished as a child. And we got some of the most amazing calls I've ever had in my whole life. And one of them was from a gentleman who gave us his name, named Sydney Germansky. S-Y-D-N-E-Y-G-E-R-M-A-N-S-K-Y. And we just checked him out. He's a disabled World War II vet. He was raised in the Bronx. He learned to fight at a young age. He has two Purple Hearts, a Legion of Honor award from the French government, and a wall full of medals from his service during the war. But he's paralyzed, he's blind, and he's partially deaf. The only way he gets around town is using his van, which no longer works. He's been begging Obama's Department of Veteran Affairs to help him with a new van. But because he did not sneak in from Mexico, because he was not brought in from Guatemala, the government has told him to drop dead. He has a 2004 Dodge Caravan that's so rusted out he can no longer use it. He said they keep telling me that I have to wait in line, and according to the president's edict, no vet should have to wait in line. When I tell them that, they laugh. See, they're waiting for Sid to die. That way Obama can write him off and there'll be no more costs and he can save it for the illegal children from Guatemala. Anyway, Germansky is just looking for 19 grand for a van. I just found this a minute ago. He's written to President Barack Obama, and instead he got from Obama, you know what? Nothing. Serves our country, and this is how he's repaid. Unbelievable to me. So we're going to help Sid. We're going to help him on the Savage Nation. Sid, if you're listening to the show, I promise you help is on the way. Remember when I reunited the soldier with his dog a few months ago? Remember, and I promised his father that when he got out, we'd buy him a van? Okay, I'm a man of my word. We're going to help him with a car. And Sidney, we'll do something for you as well. And if anyone wants to help Sid, a few bucks here and there, go to michaelsavage.com and you'll see my Savage Legal Fund. You don't really need to give any money. I'll take it out of my own pocket. If you want to, though, then mark it for the veteran's van. Just say for Sidney's van, for Sid's van. We'll see what we raise. But I'm going to send it on to him. Maybe there's a car dealer in the New York area who wants to give Sid a van. I don't know. It's a huge show with a tremendous audience. But we're talking about punishment, crime and punishment. He was talking about what real torture is. The Germans captured him. They broke his back with rifle butts, broke his chest. He wouldn't talk. They left him to die in the snow. And here's a guy now, 89 years old, has to listen to that vile harridan, whatever her name is, fine liar, Feinstein, talk about torture. It got him so enraged. And he's infuriated at the government. He's infuriated at her for the lie about torture. He knows the CIA is the only wall that we have between us and another 9/11. He knows that. He knows 9/11 could happen tomorrow because of the kind of behavior that we're seeing coming out of these pinkos in the White House and everywhere around him, bending over backwards. Hillary Clinton saying that we should empathize with our enemy? Tell that to Sidney Germansky. Maybe as they were breaking his back with rifle butts and spitting at him in the snow, he should have empathized with them, Hillary. How's that for a campaign idea? Maybe you can get Sid on the stage telling him that he forgave the Nazis for breaking his back and his chest, Hillary. Maybe you can pick him up out of the snow yourself. Now let's go back to Matt from KSFO in San Francisco. Matt, you're a man who was raised by a rageaholic. You said an Irish guy, seven children, beat everyone. And then as he got older, you became bigger and you beat him, right?
Well, no. I was able to actually be mature past the point of wanting to beat him. I was just trying to keep him away from hurting people in our family.
All right. But how did it end? I mean, he's gone, right? He's passed away by now?
He's gone. Yes. What was it, 16-something years ago.
All right. But didn't he leave scars in his wake? Every child is damaged from him, right?
Michael, listen, I'm learning it now. I'm 51 years old, and I've dealt with this repercussion of that my whole life. And just in, I swear, meeting my wife and things, it's opened me up to what he taught me was just the worst habits that a man should ever have. He was demeaning and just nasty. And listen, I fight those demons every day. I try. I have good days and I have bad. It's a comfort zone for me, and it makes me sick. I can be very demeaning, condescending, and nasty, and I learned that all from him.
Well, maybe you ought to go to work for the Department of Veterans Affairs for Barack Obama. That's how they talk about veterans behind their backs.
I was going to say, that's what I hear when I hear these people speak. I want to throw up in their...
Yeah, Gruber. Gruber sounds like your father. Old Gruber condemns the American voter, calls them every name under the sun. You think Obama and Holden will laugh at us for getting away with what they're getting away with?
They love it. These are the people. They talk about being nice. No, they're controlling freaks, and that's exactly what my dad...
Correct. Nobody goes into politics who's sane. It takes a very special personality to want to have that much power over people. And I would say it's a warped personality that wants that much power. And the more power they have is the more warped they are, not the better they are. So they have to be very skilled entertainers in order to maintain that front. But let's put that aside. I mean, I know the psychology of power madness, but the fact of the matter is, we were talking about how you raised your own children, and you did not resort to the same behavior, correct?
I did not. I met my wife. She was raised in a nice, cuddly family. She studied child development, and she's so, I call it active listening. Even when the kid is, you know, barely speaking, she looks and listens, and I had learned that from her. It took effort.
Oh, because your father didn't listen to you.
No. He did anything and everything he wanted upon all of his kids, and if you didn't do what he asked, you paid the price.
Mm-hmm. Well, Matt, I'm going to give you a special gift. I'm giving you a free bunch of Shari's berries for your sister. How's that?
Michael, don't let me get off this phone until I give you a compliment. It's not even a compliment. Listen, what you do is expected out of people with such character as you. I'm not going to grovel at your feet and go, oh, my gosh, you're the best thing since the sun rose this morning. You are a strong man of strong character, and this is the type of call you just had with that veteran. That's the type of thing that you do. You expect that out of yourself, and it's not something you can teach. I seek out people like you. I call them old school gentlemen. I want
to
be
them. Well, that's very nice of you, but to be honest with you, I'm not. I have to do this to survive in radio because mentally I can't do Democrat, Republican. I never could. I don't know how anyone listens to it after a while. I don't understand it. And I'm not trying to knock anyone, but truthfully, there's a limit to it. The election's over. We know what's going on. There's not much more we can do. So the fact of the matter is, I'd rather talk about Life 101 than Obama 102.
You're right, and it's made to not understand. That's the whole shell game. Everybody.
Yes, exactly right. Look, wasn't it written, was it in Plato's Dialogues where he said, or as Aristotle said, that the average man doesn't really see what's going on? He sees the shadows on the wall of the cave. He doesn't really see the actors. He only sees the shadows on the wall. We don't know what Obama really is. We can only surmise it by what he actually does as opposed to what he actually says.
Listen, I could talk to you all day. I want to make one last comment, and then you can kick me off. You are such a worldly, deep thinker, intelligent, sharp, strong man, and you lose track of who you really are until you hear your theme music. I freaking love it.
Well, you know, Matt, it's interesting that many people think that, but how do you explain that in the Bay Area, although I have risen higher than anyone in the history of the Bay Area media, I am zero, I have no one knows me. How come the newspaper never covers me? You'd think that they'd want to cover somebody with an opposing viewpoint, wouldn't you? And I'm just joking. It's a facetious statement. There is no newspaper in the Bay Area. We have none. All we have are sheets put out by the government media complex that only support the Communist Party line. When the looters burn, they're called peaceful protesters in Emeryville. When the looters attack police, they're called enraged minorities who were pent up and had nowhere to go with their violence. I found a video last night of the vermin who were breaking into liquor stores across the bay as near as last night, stealing liquor, stealing candy. It had nothing to do with racism. It had nothing to do with protest. They are common vandals. There's no other word for them. You can call them every name under the sun. And the reason they're getting away with it is because the police have been handcuffed by Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, Michelle Obama, Jerry Brown. You name them. Go down the list. And you'll realize that the liberal government has handcuffed our police. And right now, there is no punishment for the crimes. Now, stay on the line, Ken. Matt, I'm sorry. We're going to send you the Shari's berries for your sister. Anyone else can get them at berries.com. When I come back, I'll take your calls on how you were punished as a child and what lasting legacy it has had upon you today, right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-CO-I-N. Talking about crime and punishment and real torture, and if you've just tuned in the show, I can't review everything we've done, but we're going to continue to take calls because some of the callers I see up there, I don't know if they're true or not. Here's one that I don't know if it's true. I hope it is. Bill is listening to me on WMAL in Washington, where I've set new standards of broadcasting, and in Washington, D.C. now I have one of the largest audiences in the history of talk radio right now in Washington, in the heart of darkness, where Boehner resides, by the way. They're listening. They're hearing the show. And Bill's listening on WMAL. Bill, what's on your mind today?
It's hard to believe, Michael, but when I was growing up, my father was in Korea fighting in the early 50s. My mother was alcoholic. Wouldn't change my diapers, would put me in the playpen, and I would have to fight over the dog for food and water. And then when my father remarried, I had a stepmother who was...
Wait, you went over it so fast. Your mother didn't feed you? She put you in a playpen with a dog and you fought over food?
Because I saw my diapers.
Oh, I see. Well, there was a cause for punishment right there. I'm sorry I missed that, Bill. Yeah, it's funny. Here's a guy tortured, punished, and you have a sense of humor. If I said the same thing to the average educated liberal in the Bay Area, they wouldn't even understand my sarcasm. Do you know that?
Oh, I understand that. And also, Michael, it's very important for me to say that when my father remarried, I had a stepmother who was brutal. And on repeated occasions, she would say, if you miss the mark around the toilet again, I'm going to put your testicles on the chopping block and chop off your penis. So to this day, I sit.
In other words, she induced castration anxiety in you.
I guess that's...
I mean, that's what it's known as in the psychological literature, castration anxiety. You're not alone in that. I mean, I'm not trying to make light of something so severely traumatic, but that is known as castration anxiety. I mean, we've all, read, anyone who's read Freud knows about it. Everyone knows about it except the modern age of pop psychologists who know very little about human nature. Bill, were you able to get married and have children?
No. I almost married my high school sweetheart, but I was pretty certain I would never do to my children what was done to me.
Yeah, I mean, you were traumatized. You figured it's better not to get kids in the world, right?
Yes.
But would you say, I'm curious, Bill, without, dwelling on your terrible upbringing, were you able to work? Did you have a career, profession, job?
I had a career, but then I suffered multiple suicide attempts when I was in my early 20s. I survived. I'm a survivor. My legacy is I've given back, through various things in the community, anger management. I was an anger management leader. I did well in school. Now I'm an animal rescue with abandoned animals in my
beautiful
retirement.
Isn't that something? That's really something. Well, that's God's work. That's God's work, taking the poor little innocent dogs that are running wild in the streets. I get it.
Mm-hmm. And so...
Well, Bill, let me send you a nice Christmas present. I'm going to send you my book. It's My Legacy, Stop the Coming Civil War. It's what I give as a gift. I'm giving it to you. What can I say? Stay in the line, Bill. What a trauma that was. Who would believe this? See, people don't really understand the level of abuse that some children have gone through and have come out the other side of the looking glass, and they're functional. Some are not that functional, but we've had several who were pretty badly traumatized and are functional. You see, the human being can take an awful lot of abuse and punishment and survive, as Sidney demonstrated. It doesn't mean he wanted to be tortured. Nor did it mean he's not tormented by it every day, but he survived, didn't he? And it goes back to how overprotected we are and how the government continues to inculcate the sense of weakness and victimhood in us and how damaging that is to us, to our society, to make people victims, to make people feel weaker than they are. The human being is quite tough, quite durable. Psychologically, Freud said if one day you awaken and find out that you can only, you find out you only have one arm and one leg, and he meant that psychologically, he said, by God, he said, crawl on one arm and one leg. I've never forgotten that because we're all basically crawling on one arm and one leg psychologically. Do you know a perfect man out there? Have you met one yet? I haven't. Everyone I know who I really get to know is crawling on one arm and one leg. It's as though they were sprayed with Raid when they were young, sprayed by life. And some of the neurotoxins damage some of their, let us say, abilities. So the fact is that we all crawl on one arm and one leg psychologically. What is this with the government telling us what? We should all be ideal, perfect people? That's, again, you know, when I say communism, I say Marxism. Do you understand it's part of the big lie? This promise of the perfect man, the equal man, this is right out of the protocols of Karl Marx, where they promised equality. They promised all men are born equal. It's all a lie. Anybody knows that. Look at the NFL. Could you play a linebacker? Of course not. I have to take the most grotesque example to give you an example. You know, it's funny because I have a book coming up with an author on A Troublesome Inheritance by Nicholas Wade, and he's going to talk about something directly related to what I just said, which is that there is a biological reality to race. There is a difference between races biologically. We are not all the same. And it explains, well, genes, race, and human history, A Troublesome Inheritance. And he says certain things that may be shocking to people, but it seems to be based upon modern genetic knowledge. And I'd like to hear about it when he joins us in a few minutes right here on The Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. It's 34 minutes after the hour. We've been talking about how, first we were talking about torture and how absurd it was of Dianne Feinstein to attack the CIA at a time like this. We had a World War II veteran whose back was broken, chest was broken by Germans who tried to get him to talk and he wouldn't. Sidney called the show. He's still living. And then we went to the topic I really wanted to talk about, which was how you were raised as a child and were you punished. What treatment did your parents use on you as punishment? I, for one, never used corporal punishment on my kids myself. But many of you were abused as children, which is fascinating because it leads perfectly to the topic that I was going to talk about at this time anyway, which is related to the book. The book is A Troubled Inheritance, Genes, Race, and Human History by Nicholas Wade. The part of this book that caught my eye over the weekend was control of aggression, the genetic relationship to various aggressive, functions in man, including aggression. And Nicholas Wade joins us now to discuss control of aggression, amongst other topics on the Savage Nation. Welcome to the Savage Nation, Nicholas.
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hello.
Are you there? Yes.
Yes, I am. Right.
So I'm interested in this control of aggression aspect of your interesting book. Could you tell the audience about the role of MAOA in the control of aggression?
Sure. Well, aggression is a sort of complex behavior, and there are probably quite a few genes that influence it. But the first one that came to light was the MAOA gene you mentioned. It came to light in a Dutch family, and it's a variation in a normal gene that predisposes a person to aggression. And half the members of this Dutch family had a very violent past, had run into the authority or ended up in jail for various crimes. So this does seem to be one of the genes that influences our behavior toward aggression.
You then said that mutations that totally disrupt the gene, like MAOA, have serious consequences for the individual. And then, you know, what's really interesting to me is that the variation of the promoters for MAO in human populations. Can you give us a few words on that?
Well, there's been one study that shows variations in this gene among various races. I should say at once, it's very difficult to interpret studies like this. So one shouldn't draw too much conclusion from what we know at present. But in this one study, there were slightly higher levels of this particular MAO promoter gene in African Americans and slightly lower in the white population, as I recall. But you have to remember this is just one gene that influences aggression. So there are certainly many other genes that influence aggression that we haven't yet found. And it may be that those exist in higher numbers in the white, in the European Caucasian population, say, than in African Americans. So
right. You point out that a gene called HTR2B, an allele that predisposes carriers to impulsive and violent crimes when under the influence of alcohol, has been found in Finns. So there are other genes involved in aggression, but the MAO triggers were of interest to me because I couldn't believe it when I read in your book that Michael Vaughan of St. Louis University looked at the MAO promoters in various ethnic groups, and they compared various races. And I couldn't quite follow why it varied so much, though. Is that an adaptation, do you think?
Well, it's a very interesting question to which we don't yet have the answer. I mean, it's just an empirical finding from one study. I think if you look at it in the broader perspective, I think human aggression in general has been sort of fairly steadily declining over the centuries, and we're much more peaceable now than we used to be. And I think you can make a reasonable argument that just as a whole, everyone in the world has become less aggressive. And if so, that could be because of role of natural selection in influencing these genes.
In your book, which is interesting, why do you call it a troublesome inheritance, genes, race, and human history? What part of this would be troublesome, Mr. Wade?
Well, it's because the subject of race is has led to lots of troubles and discord. It's not troubling in a scientific sense. I mean, it's a perfectly natural phenomenon that if you take a species and you spread it around the world, it's going to differentiate. In other words, the different populations are going to sort of take different paths through evolution because they're now geographically separate from each other, and that's what's happened to our species as well as others.
You know, you make a phenomenal point on page 230 that I have to make because we've wondered about this. You ask, how is it then that Arabic science was so good in the 8th to 14th centuries despite such inhospitable conditions? And you then say that according to Huff, the early centuries of Muslim rule, in the early centuries of Muslim rule, few people had in fact converted to Islam. It was only when the pace of conversion picked up in the 10th century that Muslim majorities became commonplace, a dynamic, quote, which probably had negative consequences for the pursuit of the natural sciences and intellectual life in general. I would have to agree with you because I haven't seen much science come out of the Muslim world in the last number of centuries. I know I'm correct about that, and I couldn't understand why. Well, the Arabic people, the Semitic people are very bright people, and yet there are religions that can hold people back, is what I would think.
I think that's right. The religion is a very powerful force. And Galileo certainly had his problems with the Inquisition. And
Sorry. Yeah, he sure did. He certainly did.
So in many societies, you have this historic tussle between religion and freedom of thought. So we were lucky that in Europe, science won out, but in other parts of the world, that has not been the case.
Yes. Well, I we can do that. There's so many other aspects here. Then you talk somewhat about how religion can be a positive factor in the development of civilization, correct or incorrect?
Yes, I think that's correct. It's a great force for social cohesion, and it embodies moral standards and rules of behavior. So although critics of religion often regard it as a sort of cause of warfare, but I think the better way to look at it is a cause of cohesion and for making a society do whatever it wants to do, whether in peace or warfare.
You know, it's an interesting and really rather a revolutionary book in many ways, Mr. Wade. Do you remember what happened to Watson, Dr. Watson of Cold Spring Harbor, the Nobel Prize winner? I'm sure you know that story, correct?
Right.
Okay. And you know, it worries me because people are afraid. We don't really live in a free society. where ideas that you express in your book are probably shunned. I would think the media has probably been afraid to touch this book.
Well, thank you. It has had very mixed reviews. So it's had good reviews in some places and negative ones in others. I think most of the negative reviews were from people, as you say, are afraid of the subject and don't really want it broached. But the reason I wrote the book was that I realized, having covered the genome for many years as a science writer, it seemed to me we'd reached a point where we'd had a lot of information about this process of human differentiation, the end result of which is different human races, that it was a very important subject, and someone should tell the public what we know about it. There's nothing sort of terrible there. It's just quite interesting stuff, even if difficult.
Oh, it's fascinating. Look what you say. He points to findings that middle-class social traits, thrift, literacy, nonviolence, have been slowly but surely inculcated genetically within agrarian populations, a process that culminated in the Industrial Revolution and the emergence of modern societies. You then go on to say the notable achievements of Jewish communities are explored as another possible example of human evolution within the historical period. Could you please expound on that statement? What do you mean the notable achievements of Jewish communities are explored? What would you ascribe that to? Genes, race, or religion?
Well, one should look for a cultural explanation for the enormous contributions that Jews have made to society. So you get explanations like, well, it's sort of hectoring mothers, or it's sort of respect for education. But those two explanations don't seem very convincing to me, because everyone has harassing mothers, and many people respect education. So you then might start looking for a genetic explanation and asking whether there's anything in Jews' special history that has encouraged them toward this sort of this niche of cognitive excellence. And that's an argument I explore in the book. And I guess it's a complicated argument. The principal theme is that very early on, about 73 A.D., there was a rabbinical requirement for universal literacy. So every male Jew had to educate his son so they could read the Torah. And that meant that Jews were, from that moment on, or shortly afterwards, they were sort of more or less 100% literate, which was very rare, certainly in the medieval world, and put them in a very good position to succeed in business, because they could write contracts, do currency exchange, and things like that. That's the sort of principal theme of the argument.
Fantastic. It's utterly unbelievable that most people would be afraid to even broach the topic and explain that there are differences between people. It's an uncomfortable reality, but most humans recognize that there are differences in individuals, certainly. I mean, this rubbish that we're all the same, I mean, just obviously that makes no sense. We're not all the same in any way, and we're all different like snowflakes, but there are variations, according to your book, that go beyond the individual variation. And you, I think, very clearly and succinctly explain them in your book, A Troublesome Inheritance, Genes, Race, and Human History. And Nicholas Wade, I want to thank you very much. We could talk for another hour, but I think that this is quite enough for an average for a regular audience out there. It's been very, very wonderful speaking with you, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Michael, so much.
Thank you. See, I mean, this is what I'm talking about. A book like this, who in talk radio is going to take it on? Nobody. Why did I take it on? Don't know. Was interested in it. How did it fit in with today's show? Don't know. Pure intuition. Did it fit or not? We were talking for an hour and a half about aggressive parents, weren't we? And then I said, maybe we should. I read the book over the weekend. Someone sent me a couple of chapters from what they had read and said, you have to have them on. Got the book, got the author on, booked them for today. So about 30 minutes ago, I said to the guys, maybe we should cancel the interview with Mr. Wade and do it another day. And the more I thought about it, I said, no, we've been talking about aggression in parents. It fits perfectly, but it is amazing, because the mapping of the genome that has been going on for quite a while now has advanced our knowledge of behavior to an extent that most of us could never even imagine. And we don't want to accept the fact that a lot of what we do is in our genes. It's not a it's not based on other factors. That's the thing I guess we're trying to say. You know, it's like the old nature nurture argument. Well, of course, there's always both, but there are genetic inheritances that we all have that give us advantages and disadvantages. And most particularly to me of interest was the aggression thing, the link in aggression. And the MAO link was very interesting to me because in the early days of psychiatry, back in the 50s, the early stage antidepressants were MAO, were the antidepressants were MAO inhibitors. I don't know if they're still used. I think they are. And they were used long before the Prozac type of generation, you know, the serotonin reuptake inhibitors. And now the MAO inhibitors are very interesting because two MAO promoters are associated with higher levels of delinquency and aggression. And members of the two promoter group were more likely to be arrested and imprisoned than others. It depends upon how many promoters of these genes you have. And they looked at different populations, white, Caucasian, Asian, and African-American. And there were various numbers of alleles in the various populations. And then he cautions that even if one population is more likely to carry the violence-linked allele of the MAOA promoters than are others, it could be that the other groups carry the aggressive allele of other genes yet to be identified. That sort of covers the tracks of what he actually said in the paragraph before it. Nevertheless, this is fascinating stuff for me, and I hope that you find it as interesting as I do, and I hope that you understand the direction I'm trying to take talk radio on my own show. I mean, let others do as they will. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-COIN. It is Michael Savage. What an interview that was, and it fit right in. And, you know, what's interesting to me is I was reading one paragraph in the book. Then we're going to go back to how you were punished as a child. You won't believe the calls we have. I don't have the time. Listen to this. Listen to this one paragraph. Though Europe's universities started by teaching theology like the madrasas, they soon moved on to the philosophy of Aristotle and from philosophy to physics and astronomy. And within these institutions, scientists were able to begin the systematic investigation of nature, thus laying the basis for modern science. So that's how Europe surpassed both China and the Islamic world, because they were not as constrained, because they had independence from the, let us say, the stultifying Quran or the stultifying Confucian system, in that case, in China. And in other words, modern science was for centuries suppressed both in China and in the Islamic world. And so it rose in Europe. Does that mean the Europeans were smarter? I don't know. Maybe. I doubt it. Now that China has sort of freed itself, we'll see what they produce for the world. When will the Islamic world free itself? And we'll see what the great Semitic mind, the great mind that is being bound up with this insanity of Wahhabism. Of convert everyone or kill them. Once that ends, the world may be a remarkable place. The day I start seeing inventions coming out of the Arabic world, instead of cutting heads off, is I'll know the world's onto something like a cure. Once they stop cutting off heads and start actually saving people and inventing life-saving devices, then I'll know the world is on the way to salvation. But nevertheless, it was fascinating thus far. Stay with me. I have another big hour across 200 affiliates, by the way, where we're going to talk about punishment for young children.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Sooner or later, God will cut you down, Johnny Cash. So this goes back to Dianne Feinstein's cutting America's throat with her lies about the CIA, especially at a time like this, with America in shock that this old harridan, this nasty old woman, this 83-year-old monster, who has done so much damage to the nation that we could never imagine it, but led me to thinking about not torture but punishment and how children were raised and were they punished. And we've been discussing it and getting calls of the type you could never imagine. And I can't review them all. I won't. I guess you could find it somewhere online. But in this hour, we'll continue the punishment story. We also had an author on with a book about genes and race and human behavior, which is a topic that's verboten in the new free America. So let's begin with some of the callers who have been holding a long time to tell their story. WBAP in Dallas. Catherine, tell us your story.
First of all, Happy Hanukkah, Michael.
Well, thank you very much, and Merry Christmas to you as well.
Thank you very much. I was hearing mostly men. I was working on in the kitchen and hearing mostly men talk about the beatings that they got, but none from women. And I thought, I got to tell my story. You just wouldn't believe it. My dad was a pilot, so he was gone all the time. And I was the youngest of three children. I had polio in 1953 when the outbreak was so bad. I was diagnosed at 10 days old.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, I had a hard time walking. I had to wear braces. And my mother was an alcoholic. And
as were many Army wives, by the way, in those days.
Well, my dad was Army Air Force, and he was a pilot for.
Oh, so but you're telling your story of punishment. So who punished you? Your mom?
My mom. She hated women. She loved men. My brother could do no harm, but I got drugged around the house by my head and my hair. She knew it didn't take much to knock me off my feet. And there were times that she'd be so drunk, I'd come home from being out with my friends, and my father would meet me at the door, and she says, "You need to go clean your mother up." And I'd have to go downstairs, and she would have BM all over her, all over the wall, and I had to clean her up and
oh, God.
Do all this. But
well, how did you survive all of that? I mean, this is like a nightmare. It sounds like a snake pit of the worst order. How did you survive this?
Well, you know what? My girlfriend asked me that. You know, she and I have been friends since we've been 12 years old, and we're 61 now. And she goes, how come you didn't tell anybody? Well, you didn't do that back then.
That's right. You kept it to yourself. You never divulged family secrets. It was all in the family.
Yes. You didn't tell those type of things.
That's right. It was considered a real violation of the family trust. I get it.
Absolutely. And I would tell Daddy and Daddy, we'll just stay out of her way.
Well, so your poor dad would come home from long, long assignments, and then he'd have to face this poor, sick wife and the abused daughter.
Yeah.
Well, darling, listen. You're well enough to listen and learn and talk and teach us. And I'm going to give you a little gift for the holidays. You're getting a free box of Shari's Berries, those chocolate-covered strawberries that I love so much. And anyone else can get them at berries.com. So hang on the line. We'll get your name, and they'll be sent out to you. What a story that is. Do you want me to do more of these, or do you want me to go on to the news about Obama again or the Constitution or Democrats and Republics, whatever they're called, Republicans? Republic sins? Hey, Robert, I stumbled on a new word, Republic sins. It's the Republic Sin Party. I wonder how long it'll be till it's stolen by another host. The Democrats, which we've heard bad names about for years, how about Republic sins? Oh, yeah, slip of the tongue sometimes does well.
Let's see. What do we have? Ted Cruz. He's still around. Oh, torture is wrong. Oh, Ted Cruz supports Feinstein. Great. Did him so. Let's hear clip 12.
Now, let me be clear. Torture is wrong. Unambiguously, period, the end. Civilized nations do not engage in torture. And Congress has rightly acted to make absolutely clear that the United States will not engage in torture.
Okay, so he's finished now. That's the end of Ted Cruz. I knew there was something there. I knew it. I don't care who tells me otherwise. Ted Cruz just took Dianne Feinstein's side. Ted Cruz just attacked the CIA. Ted Cruz just took the side of the liberal socialist regime. That does it for me. I mean, I often wondered why he was so popular among certain hosts and why he or his handlers would never come on the Savage Nation. Well, the answer is right there. That's all. Let's say we disagree on virtually issues like this. We don't have to go any further than that. So he's lost my vote of confidence. Next. So who's left now on the Republican side? All right, some callers out there on the Savage Nation. We had a veteran in the last hour who blew our hearts out with what was done to him compared to torture, Mr. Cruz. Perhaps you should take time out from the Beltway and listen to talk radio, and maybe you'll learn what real torture is, as opposed to joining the chorus of anti-Americanism that is raging in the land. WABC in New York. Melissa, thanks for holding so long. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hello, hi. So I'm a new listener to you, and I wanted to share my story. I'm a Hispanic, female. I'm 30 years old, and growing up, my mom was addicted to drugs, and we would not only get hit with belts, punches in the face. What I remember the most hurtful out of all those things is that we used to have to kneel in the corner on raw rice.
To hurt your knees?
On your knees, in the corner.
But I'm saying, what was the object was to hurt your knees?
I guess.
Well, I mean, well, when you were kneeling in the corner on raw rice, did it hurt your knees or not?
Of course it hurt.
All right, so I'm saying, so the punishment, that's a unique punishment. Is that connected to throwing rice at a newlywed couple? I don't understand the relationship, if there is one.
I don't know. She said her mom did it to her. And
oh, what a nice custom. That's a very nice custom. I wonder where'd that one come from? I thought perhaps you were going to talk about the Bataan Death March. I never heard of anything like that. And how long would you have to kneel on raw rice? How long did the punishment last?
For me, it felt like hours. I mean, she would go on about her day. I would be in the corner, and when I was...
And what kind of infractions did you commit that would send you to the rice corner?
It would be anything. Anything. You know, she was a clean freak, so maybe I didn't sweep the floor well. You know, I remember one day she waxed the floors, and I was young. I was very young, because we were eventually taken away and put into foster care. But I was very young, and I spilled grape juice. Right? And I tried to clean it up, but I guess I didn't clean up well enough. And she had this thing where she would walk barefoot, and if she felt anything under her feet, she would have a heart attack. So I left the floor sticky, okay?
Oh, what a crime that was.
Yeah, because, like I said, I only lived with her until I was about 10. So,
well, Melissa, let's put aside the horrors of your childhood. Did you grow up? Were you able to have a relationship? Are you in a relationship?
Well, I'm in a relationship, but the thing is that I'm in many relationships. They don't seem to last long. You know, I have two kids. I don't repeat the abuse, but I do feel like I yell a lot. You know what I mean?
And yeah. That's something you're going to have to learn to control, because your kids will get, you know, screwed up from that. You know that you're yelling at them, and you shouldn't. So you're trying to control it, so it makes you even feel worse, and then that creates a cycle.
Yeah.
Well, Melissa, I hope you remain a new listener for a long time, and I thank you for joining us on WABC in New York. So it just shows you what happens to people, right? It just shows you what effects these punishments have on kids. And it goes on forever. It goes on and on and on. So let's lift the tempo up on the show a little bit. You can call on these horror stories if you want. I want to go to some of the sound. We played Ted Cruz, who joined Dianne Feinstein. I think, maybe I'm taking him out of context, if he cares to call the show and correct the record, I am open to that. But he just said torture is wrong. Listen to clip 12 again so I'm not misquoted. Go ahead, please.
Now, let me be clear. Torture is wrong. Unambiguously, period, the end. Civilized nations do not engage in torture. And Congress has rightly acted to make absolutely clear that the United States will not engage in torture.
So he's now joined Dianne Feinstein and Obama and Kerry and the left-wing establishment in taking that position at this time. Not good. Not good at all. And I'll leave it go with that. I don't mean to undermine him, but he just undermined himself as far as I'm concerned. He didn't have to make a speech on torture right now. He could have made a speech on it's a greater crime to undermine America in a time of Islamic war than it is to have waterboarded, let us say, individuals who were going to commit harm on this land 12 years ago. That's what he could have said. Boehner, I don't want to play Boehner. The Republican Party doesn't interest me. I don't know who James Mitchell is, or I would play him. Is he important? I have four pages of... Oh, he developed waterboarding. Oh, a psychologist who developed it. Let's see what he has to say in 25.
The purpose of the enhanced interrogation program was to get the detainee to be willing to engage with a debriefer or a targeter who was asking a question, and that it wasn't designed so that you would ask questions about actionable intelligence while the detainee was experiencing the enhanced interrogation program.
Okay, 27 now. Let's hear 27.
To me, it seems completely insensible that slapping KSM is bad, but sending a Hellfire missile into her family's picnic and killing all their children and, you know, killing Granny and killing everyone is okay for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons is, what about that collateral loss of life? And the other one is that if you kill them, you can't question them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 28 is the next. Interesting stuff.
I don't think it's the right thing to do. I don't think it's the wrong thing to do. I think you can do it in a way that it constitutes torture. I think you can do it in a way that it constitutes training. I think you can do it in a way that it helps a person shift their priorities so that they experience less abuse later on. It's like every tool in the tool bag. You can underuse it, you can overuse it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, finally in 29, this psychologist who developed waterboarding has a note that's worth listening to in 29.
So even though personally, I don't give a damn whether you worship, what God you worship, which way you face when you worship, what kind of building you worship in, I don't care. But literally, when you want to kill my friends, and you want to kill my family, and you want to destroy my way of life, you've got my full attention.
See, now that's the right answer. Much better than Ted Cruz's answer. George Orwell faced the same question, the author of 1984, in the 1930s, and he wrote that if it was the age of totalitarianism and the age of fascism rising in the 30s, he had been a communist in the early 30s until he realized they were fascists, and he left the socialist communist movement when he saw how fascistic they were. And Orwell made a number of great statements, and one of the ones that always sticks in my mind is this one, when he said, if a man comes to put a bomb in your mother's house, put a bomb in his mother's house first. And that is my position on enhanced interrogation techniques, Ms. Feinstein. 855-400-7282 is the phone number. I'll be right back, right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN.
Yeah, good book says, don't throw stones in glass houses, or make sure we're looking at the log in our eye before we're pointing out the mote in other folks' eyes. And I think that's as true in politics as it is in life.
Where does he get these things from? The good book? To him, the only good book is Das Kapital, or Rules for Radicals by Alinsky. Where does it say don't throw stones in glass houses? It means don't throw... It says don't throw stones at glass if you live in a glass house, not don't throw stones in a glass house. Making sure we're looking at the log in our eye? Yeah, right. Okay. So we're talking about torture. And many of you want to, you know, I cooked, I know I'm going to jump now to something. It's nothing to do with torture. On my website, which I do want you to look at because it's got all the stories that I didn't talk about today, I have a picture. I never do this. I cooked before the show, and I want you to take a look at the masterpiece I created. It's so good on michaelsavage.com. It's delicious. I want to eat it, but I ate it already. I can give you the recipe for it. I can cook leftovers better than anyone on earth. Maybe I should do my book, The Leftover Cookbook. It's not really leftovers because I actually cooked it. It's amazing. First, I was making rice in a rice cooker. Then I put the sliced bell red pepper. Well, the main thing is to start with the olive oil, and you got to get it very, very hot before you put the vegetables in. It's a mistake everyone makes. You cannot put vegetables into cold or lukewarm oil. You're going to ruin the meal. It's just useless. Now, I don't mean burn the oil. I'm talking about get it hot enough, not warm, but hot. When you put the vegetables in, you hear them like goats, then lower the heat immediately, so otherwise you'll burn them. So start your sliced bell red pepper first and keep them going for 5 to 10 minutes, I would guess. Keep turning them or they'll turn black and burn. And then on top of that, I put a bed of scallions on top of the peppers because the scallions cook faster. On the other side of the pan, I put chicken. It was a pre-cooked chicken. And I put it into the pan in the oil. And then immediately on the chicken, you put tarragon. The most important spice to remember is tarragon with any fowl. I happen to love paprika, especially in the winter. Fabulous, fabulous, important spice, long forgotten. Tremendous health benefits. Then you put in the red sauce. Then you put the rice in after it's cooked or just before it's finished. And cook for another few minutes. I guarantee you'll love it. And there it is, a savage meal for a rainy day.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
He's nullified the government. I mean, he's nullified the Republican Party. He's nullified the American voter. He's nullified any opposition. Why shouldn't he feel good? Boehner doesn't exist. The Republican Party doesn't exist. Listen to Ted Cruz. The people don't matter. We're peons. Gruber said it all. We're nothing. We're idiots. We're peons that don't count for anything. You have a veteran called two hours ago, 89 years old, back broken, chest broken, left to die in the snow by the Nazis, and he can't get the money from the VA to get a van to go around. But if he was brought in by a coyote across the border, Obama would invite him in the White House, and I suppose Nancy Pelosi would wash his feet. Go figure, the country you're living in. It's as though a foreign nation invaded America and put in a group of hostile human beings to run your country. Doesn't it feel like that? Like we've been invaded and there's a foreign entity that's running the country and they're doing everything they can short of taking people out and shooting them or putting you in concentration camps to ruin your nation and to conquer you. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. You'd think that with an election, the Republicans would be aggressive and vocal. Nothing. Instead, Ted Cruz takes their side now on the torture issue. Just what I needed. Just in the right time, comes in the wrong. I knew there was something wrong there. The voice, it was pinchy. The pinchy voice told me to watch out. Anal retentive. I'm just thinking out loud. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But very, very retentive there. Something wrong. Bad upbringing. I mean, something tough upbringing, I mean. Probably Catholic school hit with the nuns on their hands. I don't know. You know, Fidel Castro went to a Catholic school in the Bronx. You don't know that. I'm the only one who knows these esoteric things. Fidel Castro was raised a Catholic schoolboy and went to a boarding school, a Catholic boarding school in the Bronx. Go figure that one out. Look what it did to him. Okay, I don't know what to, can't generalize about that. WFTL in Fort Lauderdale. Dave, welcome to the program. I hear the weather's good down there.
It's lovely down here, Dr. Savage.
Miserable, horrible, rainy, the way I love it up here.
There you go. I'd like to bring up a topic that I'm always hesitant to bring up because people, when I bring it up, they look at me like, you got to be kidding me. And that's parental abuse. I'll just give you the peak at the point my daughter, when she was 15, was going to head out the front door again in one of her run-around, drunken drug sessions, and I stood at the door not to let her out of the house. When she got done with me, I still carry the scars on my arms.
Well, what did your daughter do to you?
Well, she tore the hide right off my arms with her nails, my shirt off, my wife dialed 911. When the cops got there, I stepped aside. She ran out the front door screaming, help me, protect me. Now, I figured I was going to jail. They separated us, and, of course, she ended up going to jail. Down here in Florida on domestic abuse, someone goes to jail. Well, to wrap it all up, after 2 years of counseling, my daughter now is 27, and she has a child, not married, but living with the guy. We still are dealing with the emotional scars. My wife said to me just last week, she says, you know, David, there's two things my daughter stole from me. One was I wanted to have a relationship with my child, and two, a relationship with my grandbaby. And she has neither.
Well, so she's using her child as a weapon against her parents. It's a continuation of her aggressive behavior before that. I mean, I'm not saying it's right, but she's using the baby as a weapon.
Oh, and I know that, and it's insane. You know, I have 2 years of counseling, and...
Well, look, Dave, let's back up a minute. It's a trail of tears. Your daughter, is it both towards you and your wife, or just towards you?
No, she, I found out during counseling that she was had got a hold of some of our checks and was forging checks. And my wife, when she bounced a checkbook and threatened her with her, attacked her, pinned her on the floor, and threatened her that if she told me about it...
Well, wait. So, but it's because she's a drug addict? Is that what this is all about?
Well, you know, but she went through drug counseling, but the only thing she ever used, really, was marijuana and alcohol. But, you know, again, though, this is a crazy...
Only thing she ever used was marijuana and alcohol? Look what it's done to the Obama administration.
This is another thing. Like, right now, I mean, she is getting... it gets too deep, but I just...
All right, so what you're saying is you're reversing the conversation today from how... You were abused as a child to how you were abused as a parent, right?
Yes. And
what you're saying is we're not talking about elder abuse. We're talking about something else earlier. But you're bringing up something very interesting. Now, look, Dave, I can't tell you how to deal with a situation like that. I've been lucky that didn't happen to me ever, thank God. But I want to say, David, there are situations in family that you have to write off. There are siblings you can do nothing for. There are people who you can help over and over and over again. No matter what you give them, they want more. They will take and take and take and give you nothing back. That's a form of abuse, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Well, that's where we finally got...
You know, there was a local host here for years. He passed away, Gene Burns, I think. And he had a brother, and he was public about it. He had a brother who was a heroin addict in Florida, I believe. And he would go there repeatedly to try to help him. And no matter what he did for him, it was the same thing. And what I'm getting at is, Dave, there are situations you can't fix. You know that.
Yeah. Well, get this. When we were in counseling, when the judge ordered her to go to counseling with us, the counselor, you know, is there anything you want to ask your daughter? And I says, yes. What is it that I have done to bring this on? Now, I never did corporal punishment with my child. You know, she told me, she says, you didn't beat me enough. Now, what kind of a comment is that?
What she said? You didn't beat me enough?
Yeah, I didn't beat her enough. I should have beat her more, and then maybe she would have been all right.
Wait, you just said something very, very loaded here. You said, didn't beat me enough, meaning you did beat her?
No, I didn't beat her at all.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to clear that up. Well, I'm not into hitting children. I made a point of never, ever pulling the silent treatment on my kids, nor ever hitting them. And therefore, I eliminated two of the most important tools in child rearing. And so... I try to use positive reinforcement. It doesn't work with kids, you know, 100%.
Well, you know,
all right, my friend, thank you. I don't want to turn it into Miss Lonely Hearts here, where everyone's going to call with the worst problems in their life, but okay, bad one. Bad one. We're coming up to the holidays. I mean, you know, this all comes up around holidays, is these bad memories of family. So I'm tapping into this on the Savage Nation. I'm not making a joke of it. Family's difficult.
A lot of people know that. That's why they selfishly decide never to have families, and that's why there's no chance that America will survive at all as we know it. Look at the birth rate amongst Caucasians in America. It's less than the replacement value by a large measure. What is it, 1-1? And the necessary birth rate for a population to survive is something on the order of not 3.0 children, but I think 2.7 on the average. The white population in America is at 1-1. It's over. Now look at what Obama's doing with other populations in the country. And by the way, along the same lines, there's been a genocide committed against African Americans by the liberal socialist genocide of massive abortion in the African American community. Oh, yeah. You'd think that you hear something about that from the government, but you don't. So the race that Obama has selected for survival is the, you know what, we have to say it. He's bringing them in by the carload, by the busload, by the plane load, by the millions. Why? Now, you could say it's a selfish decision on the part of the big business interests who want laborers for the future. You could say that. You could just argue point blank that it's not, we all know it's not humanitarian, that we understand. We also know it's a lifetime legacy for the corrupt Democrat Party. We understand that as well. Because a large population of immigrants that don't understand the language, they're very useful to them because they can get away with virtually anything and the population will not know what they're doing. They'll just give them handouts, that's all. But in the long term, why would Microsoft and Facebook and the other billionaire owners want immigration reform? Why? Because they want cheap labor. It's not enough that they're making billions. They want to make many more billions. And they want to cut the wages of all of their employees. That's the mentality. But nevertheless, that's what's going on. It's probably all about labor and votes, nothing else. What else is new under the sun? But if you look ahead, you may as well recognize what the country is going to look like in a couple of decades. You know, look south of the border to see what you're going to have here. And if you think that that's a model for America, I have another guest coming for you. I never wanted to live in Tijuana. I don't know about you. I really never wanted to live in Guatemala. I don't know about you. But the unfortunate reality, the inconvenient truth, as Al Gore would say, is when have you last seen a nation thrive on uneducated individuals who have no desire to work? Tell me when. I have a family member in Canada right now. Now, Canada is a socialist nation, and she's amazed at how clean the country is. No dirt in the streets, street cleaners, street sweepers everywhere. She said San Francisco is a cesspool compared to Vancouver and Victoria. She said San Francisco is the dirtiest city she's ever been in. There's no street cleaners, no street sweepers, bums in the street. Illegal aliens throwing cans and garbage everywhere you turn. It's true. You don't have to. Don't tell me I'm wrong. I know what's going on. They bring their behavior from their home countries to here. Canada doesn't have that problem. Now, Canada has a very large Chinese population. But I will repeat it till eventually you hear me. A number of years ago, a Chinese Canadian noticed that Chinese women in their ninth month of pregnancy were flying in order to deliver the baby in Canada, because they had anchor baby laws then. And he said, if we don't stop this, we're going to destroy the nation. We must stop the anchor babies. We can't have them fly in pregnant and dump a baby on our shore. We can't afford it. Do you know that Socialist Canada ended the anchor baby law? I think it was over 20 years ago. Did you know that? Do you know that this dumb country still permits illegal aliens to dump babies on our shore and turn them into instant citizens? How is it that Canada had the sense to foresee what would happen with an endless, endless, endless population of impoverished, illiterate people? How come they had the intelligence to understand that? And there was a socialist nation when this so-called free market nation of ours doesn't have the intelligence to do the same. Just saying, that's all. To think about it, that's all. And now back to regular programming about not the abuse of Obama and the liberal socialist communist anarchist bloc. But how you were raised as a child. Is there a good one out there, or should we move on to something else? Line 9, oh God. Marty, welcome to Savage Nation on WJR in Detroit. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Marty?
Yes, sir. It's a pleasure to speak with you. My mother liked knives. She was mentally ill, and she loved to chase me around with knives. The last memory I have of her doing this was I was 14, and she stood over me while I was sleeping and woke me up, and she had a knife in her hand.
Ugh. Okay. And now that's not punishment, though, is it? That's just madness.
So, yeah.
Okay. So we're separating now from how you were raised in with punishment to you had a nut mother, an insane mother. How did this end?
I spent a lot of time out of the house, sir. I spent a lot of time recreating. I loved school. I loved Girl Scouts. I loved after-school activities. I had a lot of good friends. It ended. I got married to a wonderful man, had three wonderful children. My mother ended up passing away in a mental institution.
Oh, God.
I haven't forgiven her because I feel like my healing started when I forgave her. And I realized wow. In the 60s there was not help for what she had, and it was not talked about.
Right. No one talked about mad parents in those days, right? You lived with it and you buried it because you didn't want to air the family dirty laundry. I get it.
Yeah.
So you keep busy, you stay out of the house, you don't lock yourself up, but you don't let yourself get into bad thoughts in a house alone, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now that's such an important thing for people to recognize, Marty. Even people who haven't suffered the tragedy that you suffered with a mother like that should understand that locking yourself up in a house all day long is probably on the road to very, very bad. It's very bad for your brain, very bad for your psyche. And yet so many of us sit in front of a computer all day long, we don't even realize why we are depressed. And by the way, Marty, I want to thank you for calling the program. I'm sorry you lived through that, and I thank you for sharing it. I guess that's part of the healing. I read somewhere that depression is aggression that's blocked. Did you ever read that, Robert? Did you ever hear that one? No, no one's ever heard that one. I think, is that fairly well known? Depression is aggression that's been blocked or checked. I thought about that a lot in my life. And then, you know, you tie it into today. A lot of people are into so many wonderful sports, running. They don't feel good. They get out of the house and they run even in the rain. You say they're nuts. They're not nuts. They're fighting depression, and they're doing it in a positive way. They're not drinking. They're not smoking dope. They're not taking an antidepressant. They're running. Or heavy workouts, weights, punching a bag, kickboxing, any martial art. Isn't that a wonderful way to get aggression out of your body? Say, well, this is common sense. We all know that. Well, maybe you all know that, but maybe you all don't know that depression is aggression that's been blocked. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. About bad behavior, how about psychotic behavior that will destroy the world? As the show comes to an end, go and look at the stories on michaelsavage.com. Here's one. Islamic jihadis murdered 7 people every hour in November because they believed they were following Islamic teaching in the Quran. Now, Hillary Clinton said we should empathize with our enemies. If she becomes president, I don't think we can survive as a nation. There are other stories on the website. ISIS throws man off roof to his death for being gay. Not one word from the gay activists. And finally, here's a story for your entertainment. Iran launches We Love Fighting Israel campaign. Iranian children, teens express hatred for Jews in Israel. All the while, children in America are being taught, don't hit, don't fight back, embrace your enemy, empathize with your enemy. Tell me how this ends. Tell me who wins the war. Tell me which civilization thrives and which civilization dies. And then get back to me. This is Michael Savage. Have a real nice day and pray for America under Barack Obama.
Savage.